Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Rasmi Mark.
Rasmi Pete. What is happening?
Oh, we're back. And we're back at ECW.
Oh.
One night only, the second one. And is there a third one?
No, no, they changed the name to Extreme Rules. One night only, as it began to you know, you couldn't have too many one night stands.
No, exactly.
With the same audience. But yeah, this is about to get not
serious.
Just extreme, but very good. Mm. I remembered, like, when this pay-per-view was on, how much I enjoyed this pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And when you look online, certainly when we were doing, like, the first One Night Stand, and everyone was like, oh, it's a brilliant nostalgia fest, the first one. But the second one is the brilliantest show of all time. People love this show.
Yeah.
And I was watching it, and until we get really to this bit, I was a bit like, I've been sold a pup here. My memory is doesn't feel like this was anything like I remembered it being.
Yeah.
I remembered this being absolutely jubilant, and the crowd being a nightmare. And actually, it was just okay. It was like being an ECW show. But from this point on, it does begin to get much more exciting.
Oh, it's brilliant from here.
The next match that we have is Sabu versus the world champion Rey Mysterio. The homicidal, suicidal, genocidal, death-defying maniac. you've got to be quite violent, haven't you, to live up to that nickname?
Yeah, I think so.
You know?
Have we seen much of Sabu elsewhere?
No.
Right.
I think he has a WrestleMania coming up. He's part of an ECW multi-man tag match. He was one of the most important independent stroke American wrestlers of the 90s, really. He was a guy called Terry Brunk, and he actually never ever used that name in any way in the ring.
For obvious reasons.
Because he wanted to avoid confusion with Terry Funk. Yeah.
Terry Brunk, that's so unfortunate.
Yeah. He was the nephew of a guy called Ed Farhat, and Ed Farhat was a wrestler called The Sheik.
I would be surprised he's choose a better name than Ed Farhat.
Yes. Well, The Sheik is like one of the most important wrestlers, again, of his generation. So he was always an independent guy. He worked in Los Angeles, where he owned the territory, and he was a pretty limited wrestler. But knowing his limitations, he sold out, you know, venues across the world solely by essentially having 5-minute matches where there was lots of blood, and they just seemed incredibly real. He'd throw fire, you know, he'd use weapons. He went to Japan, where he became one of the biggest gaijin wrestlers really in Japanese history. He was a remarkable bloke, but one of the things he really never did as the booker was lose.
Right.
And it was one of the things that he really drilled into Sabu, which is, don't lose. If you lose, they're taking away your heat, they're destroying your career. If you never really lose, you're always going to be a main eventer. And for most of his career, Sabu really was a main eventer. He was super talented in that he combined two things that had come along in the 90s, the high-flying style and the hardcore style.
Right.
And so he could have matches with pretty much anyone. If they did the high-flying, he could do the high-flying. If they were Terry Funk or Cactus Jack or Atsushi Onita, he could take on them in death matches and things. And he is just a mass of scars. He was he was just a very, very big star, and he spent most of his career in ECW.
Right.
So from 1993 to 2000, he was there. He had a really good gimmick as well, which is he barely ever spoke. So he was just this mysterious guy. He was different to everyone else in the ring as well. So when people would get, like, weapons, they'd hold them up and they'd be really, like, you know, trying to get the crowd to pop. Mm. Whereas Sabu would just sort of race, grab them, run back in, and he'd just be trying to hit people with them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so he was really unlike anyone else. I think in about 1995, he had his neck broken very early on in a match with Chris Benoit. There was a backdrop went wrong. I think Sabu thought he was going up for a flapjack. Benoit thought it was a back body drop. And anyway, Sabu lands pretty much like a tent peg on his neck and it breaks. But his ability then, when he came back after a broken neck, you know, it wasn't just a sort of fake toughness. We'd seen him over the years just lacerate himself on barbed wire, that he would just be in flames and on fire. Mm. He had his neck broken and he was still there every night. He was just the real deal. Part of the problems with that, of course, is he was a bad fit for WWE.
Right.
So the things that made Sabu Sabu, he couldn't really do on a nightly basis in the WWE. Yeah. And what you end up seeing in this match is exactly the problems that they had with booking him. He had a really short WWE run. I think it lasted a year. It's not really well remembered. But actually, watching this match, you suddenly go, Christ, he seems like a massive missed opportunity.
Yeah, but again, it's like you
this
said...
This is great.
You can't just have blood all over the gaff. And to be honest, you can't look like you've just come out of a threshing machine, which is exactly what he's got. A big burn on his cheek.
He's like the wrestler Junko Sai, who is a fantastically exciting Japanese deathmatch wrestler. Mm. And there's a very good series on All Four at the minute called The Wrestlers, and it's made by an American guy who is I forget his name. I imagine it's something like Justin someone. That's what Americans all tend to be called nowadays. It's very disrespectful because it's a really good piece of work, but one of the episodes is about death matches, and he goes to meet Atsushi Onita in Japan, but he also, it's mainly about Junko Sai. Mm-hmm. And Junko Sai has exactly that same back that Sabu has, which is just, it looks like someone's just got a sort of a bradle,
right,
and just
yeah.
hacked bits of it out, and then you've healed and then they've given it another go. I mean, it's absolutely
tenderized,
absolutely gross. Rey Mysterio is good in this. I mean, he had a bad one night stand last year, and you get the feeling he wants to sort of, you know, have a good one, and he really does. And this is a really good match. I mean, the two of them were, it was a slight dream match. I think had it happened in 1995 or 6, it could have been, you know, one of the matches that people still talk about to this day.
Yeah.
But they just, what they couldn't do is they couldn't get the belt onto Sabu. They didn't want that.
Yeah.
And so they had to work out how he could lose in front of all these ECW fans. And Sabu is not a fan of losing at the best of times. So they ended up doing a spot which is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, it looked beyond dangerous.
Yeah, it was. But I mean, even earlier on in the match, they go over and it's flying through the air and it's smashing up a table.
Yeah.
And the referee does a cross as if they're actually hurt.
Yep.
But I've sort of read up on this, and there's only a few times where people have done the cross, because the cross means like they're really hurt and they need to, you know,
as soon
find
as
a way.
Really that made its way into like wrestling fans' consciousness.
Yeah.
That the X was, everybody stop, this is serious, yeah. no one's joking.
As people started using it.
The day that people went, oh, that means it's really serious, they were like, put it in everything
put
now.
Put it in everything now. Right, okay. To kind of preempt, because in the end, what happens, so they go through a tape, they've already been through one table, haven't they?
So, yeah, they've been through a load of tables, there's been loads of chair shots and things. I think there's a couple of unprotected head chair shots as well.
Yeah, there are some stinking wax in here.
And to like Rey Mysterio, which is just, it's one thing, and I don't mean this to sound horrible, but when it's Masato Tanaka and Balls Mahoney, guys, whack each other's brains
out.
In. Yeah, literally knock yourselves out with these chairs. Yeah. But with Rey Mysterio,
he's got contact lens in for one.
He's also like I don't understand why you're sort of going, at the very least, what this is going to do is take 2 weeks off his career. You know, you don't need
exactly.
to do that with essentially someone who's wearing your championship, who is like a beautiful artist in the ring.
Yeah.
Stop caving his forehead in. But they do. Sabu does a DDT. So he jumps off the ropes, catches Rey Mysterio, who is on a table on the outside, in a DDT. And the angle that Rey goes into, it's like falling down a lift shaft.
Like on his neck.
Just insane. The problem is, people were so used to Sabu doing the most extreme things.
Right.
They had seen him over the years go much, much further than that. And to end the match with a sort of, you know, I mean, Rey Mysterio could have legitimately, you could have said he cannot continue.
Yeah, because you're not used to this kind of
But
nonsense.
Sabu was clearly fine. And there is a part of me that goes, I don't think Sabu is the sort of person who's going to go, I'm really going to sell that idea.
Yeah,
he's essentially going to sort of just
wink.
Go, yeah. There's a slight thing, it's quite funny because there's another bit later on in the main event where I sort of go, oh, are they planting a seed for something a bit later?
Mm.
And actually, the seed that you would have had there is Sabu saying, they're not extreme. I didn't need to finish that match.
Mm.
You know, I could have continued.
Right.
I should be the champion.
Yeah.
There's a program for
right,
you.
Okay,
no.
Yeah.
No, read too much into it.
Well, they in this one when the special referee comes in and goes,
yeah.
I can't fight anymore. This is over.
He sounds like Ouija.
He's got such
like
a high voice.
A New York sort of film noir guy. Yeah,
I can't fight anymore. This is over.
He starts going, listen now.
Get someone who sounds like they've got a bit of authority about them, not a man who's works in a casino.
They can't fight anymore. Sabu was actually said afterwards to be furious about the way it had ended.
I think
had the audience been essentially taken in by it and gone, wow, that was the end. But Sabu would have known from the start. He's been in the company for about, I don't know, a month.
Mm.
You can't sit there and go, mate, that is not going to fly. I'm Vince McMahon. I'm Vince McMahon. Yeah, mate, you don't know the first thing about it. So he obviously kept quiet about it, but, you know, vindicated. Again, throughout his run here, they just did not know how to handle him.
Mm.
They couldn't have put the belt on him. But if you can't put the belt on him, don't put him in a match with Rey Mysterio.
No, exactly.
Give him someone else. Give him, you know, give him one of your other stars and let him win.
Yeah.
And then you can work out what you do further down the line. I understand no one is going to invent a time machine so that we can go back 13 years so that this pay-per-view can be tailored to my wants and desires. But, I mean, it should happen. It should. They would actually, within, I think, a month, be very grateful that Sabu did not have the World Heavyweight Championship.
Right, okay.
Unfortunately, Rob Van Dam, who he was in the car with, he did have the WWE belt.
Right, okay.
So, we'll leave that till the main event.
Okie dokie, then.
But suffice to say, Sabu and Rob Van Dam absolutely fucked it up the bump.
One thing I like, Rey Mysterio, I've never seen a championship belt look so big on one man.
No.
Like, he's so little.
Do you
he's
know,
so little,
I've actually got a full-size, full proper one of those belts.
Really? Cool.
Yeah, it was bought for me when Alex Zane and I went to WrestleMania 25 on our honeymoon. And he bought it. It took place on my birthday, and Alex bought me one of those, and he kept it secret. I mean, which is amazing, because it is literally three times heavier than Alex's. But honestly, there is something about, and this is just, it's going to sound so stupid, until you actually hold that thing, it's like it's got magic power. When you hold it, you begin going, I'm Ric Flair. It's really weird. You just, the weight of it, and you begin sort of going, yeah, I can picture myself just, it's magic. I'm going to bring it in so you can have a go.
Lovely old job.
and then, because we finish at about 11 o'clock, I have to then walk through Soho.
With
15 pounds worth of gold medal. That's not a good idea. Hey, look, I'm going to be defending the belt from here all the way to Leicester Square.
Yeah,
Tube
exactly
Station.
Right.
Amazing. The next match is Edge and Lita and Mick Foley versus Terry Funk, Tommy Dreamer, and Beulah McGillicuddy.
This was fun.
Oh,
from the start to the finish, this was just a lot of fun.
Isn't it? This is, watching this match you could have put on a pay-per-view that took place yesterday and it would still be every bit as entertaining. It would still seem as state of the art. There was a big AEW main event that took place in the last pay-per-view between Kenny Omega and John Moxley.
Right.
And it was a hardcore match.
Mm.
And it had loads of barbed wire, and it had loads of weapons, and it had loads of insane spots. And it is not remotely as much fun and as shocking as this match is. I love this.
Well, it started, you find out that Edge and Mick Foley are now friends for some reason. And I can't remember who said it. He goes, oh yeah, it's whoever runs ECW?
Paul Heyman.
Paul Heyman. I think it's Paul Heyman who shouts to Mick Foley, "Mick Foley, you're a prostitute."
Yes.
I was like, what's happening? So, sorry, I sort of looked down briefly and somebody shouts, "Mick Foley, you're a prostitute." I'm like, what? Wow.
This was, a big angle they did. Mick Foley was always very, very good at turning his back on ECW.
Right.
So even though he seems to sum up everything it's about,
yeah,
he was such a good performer in the ring and so good on the mic that he would often do a big thing where he'd go, "You fans disgust me. What do you give me? I give you my body and you just bay for blood. You know, you're vile and I am going to the WWE where they'll treat me well."
Yeah.
And it was just, he was very good at flipping that.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting actually with a sort of very pro ECW crowd. They buy everything that WWE are doing here. When they're going, "Mick Foley's now bad," they're like, "Yes, we accept that." "Big Show's now one of your favourites." "Yes, we accept that." If John Cena wins, we riot. Yeah, okay, well, we'll work on that
one, yeah.
It just seems everything else, we've basically got you eating out of our hands.
Yes.
So this match, Foley is so good. What they really wanted to do here was get Edge over.
Yeah.
And Edge is, I think, from the start of this match, Edge is not remotely as big a star as he is by the time it's over.
Right.
I think it's, I seem to remember watching this and just thinking, God, they've actually done it. They've made him an A-lister.
Mm.
And this match was fantastic. So Edge is this guy they've been trying to get into the main event for quite a while. You've got Tommy Dreamer, who's had a great career in ECW, but he's never connected in WWE at any meaningful level at all. You've got Terry Funk, who is very old now. He's 62. When he
62,
walks to the ring,
he gets so abused. When he walks to the ring and he's swinging, you're like, oh no.
Yeah. And then you've got Mick Foley, who is beginning to sort of enter semi-retirement.
Yeah.
So this match, I think there was, Vince McMahon, I think, was very much of the mindset that this match would not deliver. And one of the big things that he had was that Terry Funk could not deliver in the ring to a level that people would want to see.
Right.
And so Terry Funk went out there and was essentially like, well, that's basically my death warrant. I've got to prove him wrong. And the only way I can prove him wrong is by killing myself, which he then proceeds to do. This is just from the start to the finish. It is perfectly booked. It's perfectly timed. It's got Funk and Foley doing probably the last great work of their careers.
Yeah.
It's got Edge on fire. It's got so many other little bits and bobs that come in that make it fun. Lita does some sort of like, you know, she's now a year into this Lita's a Ho gimmick.
Right.
They're all chanting she's a crack whore at her. And she's doing a promo about sitting on Tommy Dreamer's face, and that's the most action he's got and everything. Mm. And it's just, she, you can still see in her eyes, she's like, I'm sort of resigned to this now, but I don't, is this right? Is this it? Here we go. And there's, as Terry Funk and Tommy Dreamer come out, there is a boy in the audience who is about 11 and he's holding up a sign and it's a big heart and it says "I heart Lita."
Oh,
and
just, no.
I just, my heart sort of broke with him watching all this sort of ultra violence and this sort of favourite he's got and her sitting there just sort of going, "When I sat in your face, Tommy Dreamer," just like, mummy, am I a man now? Is this my bar mitzvah?
Oh, the commentary team just constantly calling her a slag, basically, just constantly.
They do. I mean, it's that funny sort of little gap, isn't it, between the real and the fake. You know,
yeah.
you do something in your real life and it becomes your fake life for the next 2.5 years. The other woman in the match is Beulah McGillicuddy, who wasn't a trained wrestler, but she was the real-life wife of Tommy Dreamer.
Right, okay, yes.
Another little odd, we mentioned Tony Mameluke looking like Christopher Moltisanti from The Sopranos. Their two children play Tony Soprano's niece in The Sopranos when they were babies. but she was a girl who, she entered wrestling in about 1988, in fact, in Stampede, where she played the sister of Brian Pillman, who he told someone off for pushing about.
That's right, yes.
Wasn't a sister. They were going out.
Oh, no.
And I think she met Raven. She was actually a backing dancer for Prince in between.
Okay.
Beulah McGillicuddy.
Yeah.
She met Raven at some do, and he said, "Do you want to get into wrestling?" She said, "Sure." She ended up in ECW. She met Tommy Dreamer. They're still together.
Oh.
They seem very, very nice.
Oh,
and this
that's
is
nice.
Her last ever match. There's a mention actually in the commentary, they talk about a match that she had with the ECW referee Bill Alfonso,
right,
where they say Bill Alfonso lost a third of his blood in this match, and it was a sort of famous bloodbath. And the best thing about it is Beulah McGillicuddy was not really a wrestler. Bill Alfonso was quite small, and she did all that damage in under 5 minutes. Just a strange little story. Funk is great in this. He gets the ladder on, he swings it. Even the bits where Funk does them badly, and there are a lot of them, just as you begin to go, oh, this is embarrassing, he'll do something that's good. And it's a constant balancing act. And actually, I began finding myself thinking, this is why I really enjoy Terry Funk.
Yeah.
It's because I'm not sure at any point whether it's going to go badly or okay.
Well, he rolls over at one point, and there's one bruise on his hip, it's an old bruise.
Yeah.
And then there's another one somewhere else. And he's
on the inside of his arm at the end. It's a real... You know when, like, you'd go to... this is not a relatable story. Neither of us have done this. But you'd go to a nursing home and you'd sort of say, oh, well, if it's well run, how do you explain this?
This, bed sores and bruises.
Exactly. You'd pull back
the sheets.
To
bed sores and broomsticks.
Yeah, it's... I mean, that is the thing. Terry Funk's body should be in an old people's home.
Well, he's still alive. I saw him doing an interview.
If his body is going to take massive abuse, it should be in a medical facility, not in a place where people are cheering.
No, exactly.
He does a whole bit with My Eye as well, which is a throwback to that great empty arena match of, I think, 81 with Jerry Lawler.
Is that
Lawler,
actual...
my eye!
Is that a genuine tribute to that, like the All Hull Eye thing?
I think so. Although right. Terry Funk, he's actually got a couple of things that he always did. He was very aware that audiences would react with horror if he did an eye thing. So if you were constantly going, oh, I'm blind, people would tend to sort of go, oh, I don't. This is a new emotion for my wrestling. I was booing and cheering, and now I'm just holding onto the seat a bit nervously.
I'd like to know how they sort of do the barbed wire stuff with the, you know, the one that goes on people's necks and heads and eyes. That must be like the barbs on it must be a soft metal, or they must be rounded off.
I believe they are just cut off so they're square,
right,
that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So they have been sort of filed off. You don't have the sharp bits. No. But then again, it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't really help. If it gets you in your fucking eye. Yeah. It seemed very close to everyone's neck.
It was in a lot of mouths and necks. Yeah. Right above your sort of Adam's apple. Where there's nothing you can do. You can't sort of tense up to go, well, that'll take a bit of the pressure off. You're just like, oh God, that's just separating the skin like that. Terry Funk, the other thing he sort of really invented was the going into shock when you're like, so he pretty much goes into shock within 3 minutes in this match. He's under a ladder just shaking and shivering.
He pulls the ladder onto himself like a blanket. It looks so shit.
But yeah,
I thought he was going to do something with it or someone was going to land on him. Nothing happened.
I tell you though, by the time he's lying in that table, and he legitimately could not get out of the mess of barbed wire. So Edge at the end of it pulls Foley out, and it really rips at Foley's hair. This is one of the few matches where everyone's getting their hair snagged on stuff as well. Even in most like barbed wire matches, people do not get their hair all like, it's tangled, it's gonna be cut free. When Funk is on that thing, they are having to like lift him up, but they're snipping the bits off. I think he had 7 stitches, but he was legitimately furious that they couldn't get him off. He was tangled in it. The end of this match had Edge delivering a spear to Beulah McGillicuddy, and it is one of the best like explosive ends to a match.
Yeah.
So the best thing is she sees him coming, and she has time to go, no, lift her hands up over her mouth, by which time he's already like gone straight through her, absolutely creamed her. And then he does what's the best way you can describe it is the sex pin. And he sort of, you know, he puts her legs over his shoulders, he puts his groin against hers, and he bounces the count like in the act of coitus.
Disgusting. What a disgusting end to a disgusting match.
That would be the last act of male on female violence in WWE.
Really?
Until 2019.
Wow.
Yep, so it'd be 13 years before a man got to lay his hands on a woman. And it was...
In the ring, let's make that very clear. Yes. Wrestlers have a terrible record with this kind of thing.
It was the Royal Rumble 2019.
Right.
Randy Orton delivered an RKO to Nia Jax because she was late with his dinner.
Oh.
not play with his dinner, no. No, they were in a match.
Mark Hen.
Oh, dear. Well, it is sort of weird that, again, if you've never listened to it, say this is the first time you listen to this podcast, you're like, what a strange world it sounds like. And then you've got a bit where you go, they seemed a bit sad that there were 13 years where there wasn't any male-on-female violence. I mean, it's a strange thing.
Look, if you want equal rights, she'll be able to punch everyone.
Sad inside. It's that type of podcast. I wish they'd write it at the top.
Write it at the top. We're sponsored by an energy drink company.
I tell you the other bit that I'd not remembered at all. But there's a bit where it cuts to an absolutely horrified audience member.
Yes, I saw her.
It's like an Asian American lady.
Yeah, and
she looks like a professional.
Yeah.
Like she's sort of like, well, I'll just lock up the flower shop, you know, that's used by Gwyneth Paltrow. And where are you taking me? Oh, we're going to the Hammerstein Ballroom.
Look horrified.
Again, wrestling is the only sport where you'd look for someone who was absolutely appalled by your product and you'd go, get the camera three on them.
Get camera three. And it's good because it's only like 10 minutes into the actual match. It goes on for 20.
When you get like Terry Funk coming out with that flaming baseball bat, barbed wire baseball bat, and everyone cheers, and it obviously takes a long time for him to light it.
It cuts away and I was like, oh, what's he doing now? What's he done now? What's he done wrong now? What's he fucked up? I thought it looked like he was getting like, well, you know, it's one of those razors, those cutthroat razors. I thought, how's he going to do it? How's he going to do this safely?
The lull of my throat. But he uses a flaming baseball bat to knock Mick Foley through a barbed wire table, sort of platform. And I just thought, where else but wrestling? You know, you can say anything about it, but wrestling is the king of sports.
And then he's just on top of it. It's just like, oh no!
It will always come down to that.
People will
say, oh, but you know, how can you talk about it when it's like the majesty of football? You know, this is so many people from all over the world. You know, in harmony playing. Baseball bat is on fire. Mick Foley went through a barbed wire table.
Exactly.
Stick it in your pipe, Pele.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Balls Mahoney versus Masato Tanaka. A little bit of a palate cleanser, this one.
Yeah, it's a bit. Balls Mahoney is disgusting.
Very much. So, did you watch the video I sent you late last night?
Yes, I did.
Did you enjoy the video I sent you late last night?
I hadn't got to this point in the ECW show, so I didn't understand who this disgusting freak was. But now I'd realised it was... How many years in between the two videos? The video you sent me on WhatsApp.
6 years.
6 years between this and then.
Yeah.
Yeah, so life has got on top of him a little bit.
Well, it's not life, it's meth. So One Night Stand 2006, 6 years later, Balls Mahoney Mulhoney was having a match with Marty Jannetty at the Pro Wrestling Syndicate Supercard 2012. It's kind of an infamous video in that Marty Jannetty gives him a chair shot like he'd taken throughout his career, an unprotected head chair shot.
Yeah.
And within moments after, I think, pinning Marty Jannetty, and Balls Mahoney is just a projectile vomiting all through the ring. The way he reacts to it as well is just like, oh, it's happening again.
Yeah. He thinks it's all done. And he's like, no, I'm going to be sick again. He's on his feet.
Yeah.
He's not like he's, you know, on his... He doesn't really sell it as a thing because he's being actually sick.
Yeah.
Like, he's got concussion. He's vomiting.
Yeah, I think the thing is, you see, is it because of a concussion? Yes, he clearly had... I believe the autopsy, because he is dead. I mean, they didn't autopsy him. Well, you know, just
I wouldn't
because
have said
they
hard.
Were interested.
but I wouldn't... Shall we do it? Look, get your stuff done before. Get all your work done. So we'll start autopsying him now, because he will be dead within 5 years.
Well, I'm happy with that, lad. Great, thank you, Balls.
Yep. Wait, can you just stop me vomiting all over the table, please?
No can do. I think there's the question as to whether or not, and he certainly did have his brain showed the CTE, the damage of concussions over the years. But I think there was certainly talk at the time that his drug issues were massively out of control, and that the vomit was probably as much to do with the fact that he was on all sorts of things.
He did not look well. He's not well again, to be fair.
No, he died in 2016. So I mean, this sort of it's a decade after this, and you would be amazed how much weight you can lose in a decade, isn't it? He goes against Masato Tanaka, and the last one night stand, Masato Tanaka had one of the best matches of the night with Mike Awesome. I think they may have edited out some of the anti-Mike Awesome commentary that was on this one.
Oh, so really?
Even though he's not on the card, they're still talking about a bloke who, what was his name? Mike Awful? That
right.
sort of thing. And I can't work out whether that's gone for any reason or whether I just missed it.
But, right,
it was certainly there at some point. Strange. But Masato Tanaka comes out. Tanaka did not sign with the WWE to come back for this new ECW thing. He was working in Japan. So they were like, oh, well, let's get him in for one shot. We'll have him beaten by Balls Mahoney, who has signed to be in ECW. Balls Mahoney also, I think he did 2 years all in total. He got an action figure.
Right, okay.
Action figure. it just seems so strange. There's a bit where, you know, they basically are doing all the things that ECW matches used to have that they haven't done through the rest of the show.
Mm.
So they're doing, like, dueling chairs, and they're doing unprotected headshots again and again.
Mm.
There's a bit which always used to happen where they go brawling outside, and Balls Mahoney grabs someone's beer, he drinks it, a little bit of it, and then he smashes the plastic cup full of beer over Masato Tanaka's head, and everyone just goes wild.
Yeah.
That is not an offensive move.
No.
That is a plastic cup on your head.
No.
That's like, everyone's like, really goes
for it
every
time. Yeah, because
the
beer goes everywhere. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it does.
I agree.
Is there something to be said that we would both pay to go to something if a bloke said, I just stand in the middle of the room and I will lob beer?
Lob beer at my friend.
I'd watch that. This is really nothing of a match, really. It's just there to fill a bit of time, to give us a break between the hardcore match and the main event. The only thing I really enjoyed about it is they say, from Nutley, New Jersey, which is how Balls Mahoney was always billed.
Right.
And Taz really guffaws like he's never heard it before, and it's really funny. He sort of goes, Nutley.
I mean, his name is Balls Mahoney.
Yeah.
Crying out loud.
He used to come into Big Balls, the AC/DC song.
Right.
But I imagine that was changed in WWE because they would have to pay some money.
Yeah.
And they don't like doing that. So, the main event, I think we'll... I reckon we can crack through this.
Yeah, let's get on. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, there's a little bit of Eugene in the middle, isn't there?
Oh!
Before we get there.
Jesus Christ.
Let's not give Eugene the once-over. Let's give him respect to
yourselves.
Let me make
it clear. This is definitely now going to be split into four episodes because the Eugene bit
is here, guys. Highlight.
They do this so well because the way they set it up is they go, it's time for the main event.
Yeah.
And then Eugene comes out. Such a good piece of basic booking. Really fuck everyone off. They bring out the worst thing about WWE and they put it in front of a crowd who don't like WWE. Absolutely brilliant. Are you feeling comfortable about this section?
Well, I mean, we've seen Eugene before. It's a disabled boy. And he comes out and he does a weird poem.
Oh, I love that bit where he comes out and they're just booing.
Yeah.
And then he's just like, I wrote a poem. Do you want to hear it? I properly laughed out loud. I was like, that is so good to push that button, to just keep pushing that. You hate this, but we're going to make it. The crowd are chanting, fuck you, fuck you. And he turns and just goes, good luck to you too. Yeah, I like the way they keep him pure. They don't sort of have him come out and go, I don't like this stinky stuff. He's just going, I'm having a wonderful time. And everyone is like, will someone come and pistol whip him?
Yeah. And who comes out is, I don't think I've seen this man before. If I have, I don't like him. And if I've said I do like him last time, I don't like him this time.
You did like him last
time.
Did I? It's the Sandman.
Oh, right, yes.
The Sandman who looked under the ring to see the big spring.
That's right.
Sandman who comes out to enter Sandman.
Yes,
Sandman who got his gimmick off a child he did a paper round that he somehow benefited from.
Sorry, Mark.
He looks, because in this one he's got himself into shape for the relaunch of ECW, he looks like a sort of really buff, a cross between Rutger Hauer in Blade Runner and Albert Stepmoe.
He looks like a man who I think I've probably seen on 1,000 kind of sort of House of Cards things, and he comes in as a special advisor to the president.
Yeah.
And he's like, sorry, I don't think you should do that. And he turns out to be evil at the end.
He's always going to be evil. The last shot is of him in a dark room with a photocopier, and he looks around and he just takes out a transponder like that, and it will say update, and he'll go and it'll go boop. More booking. So the one thing about this is the crowd love the Sandman, and it's an awful thing to sort of go, here's Eugene, the sort of, how did they, I can't even remember how they used to sort of say innocent Eugene.
Innocent
that sort
Eugene.
Of thing. They would never ever say he is special.
Yeah.
You know, he has special needs. Mm. He should not be working in this environment.
He should not.
It's dangerous. It's dangerous not just for him, but for everybody else. And they just bring the Sandman out, this insanely violent drunk man. And I was sort of like, oh, I don't like this at all. The crowd are so pleased to see Sandman. He can't get to the ring. There's just too many people. And you begin watching that and you go, if you're John Cena, you're going, if I somehow end up in there, I've seen them do, like, swarm someone they love, and he can't move now. They don't like me. If I get out there and they swarm me, they'll tear me limb from limb. It must be a bit nerve-wracking.
Right,
actually,
yeah.
I think Cena in the early part of his match, he looks really like, I've got to be just straight ahead on this. I don't want to whip them up anymore. Out comes Sandman, and just as if it's not sort of like gross enough that he's going to start beating essentially, you know, this pure sort of spirit
with a stick. Singapore stick. Singapore cane.
He makes Eugene, the crowd start chanting beg, 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 and Eugene starts begging to not
be hit again with a stick.
Well, the character, he sort of, can he understand what he's doing? That's the stuff that I began getting really like upset about, going, he's begging, but does he even know what he's begging for? You know, it's gonna be, he's gonna get hit and he'll just go, is it that? Is that because of the begging? I just found it too complex. Again, look, like that flaming barbed wire bat and the barbed wire table, watching a barfly being cheered for beating up like a Special Olympian. Wrestling is the greatest sport on earth.
Oh no, it's so bad. It's so bad. Oh. And that's their, you know, that's their kind of part of the palate cleanser for the main event.
Yeah.
It's like going, please don't storm the stage because Eugene is here.
Yeah.
He might get hurt.
Beg, beg, beg. Would you like to hear a story about Sandman that I didn't know?
I would like to hear a story about Sandman, please.
When back in the ECW days, which was a famously sort of druggy locker room, the Sandman decided to stop sniffing New Bane, and he to start injecting it.
What's New Bane?
I believe it's some sort of pain pill.
Right, okay.
So normally you eat them. He'd begun sniffing them, but he decided to inject it.
No.
He died in his car on the way to a show in Milwaukee. He was, however, revived at the hospital, and he competed in ECW the same night.
Oh, my God.
Tommy Dreamer went on the Steve Austin show and he said that the manager, Bill Alfonso, got out of the car and took the drugs so they wouldn't be found there as they arrived at the emergency room with Sandman in the car. And they just dropped the Sandman off outside as if they didn't know him and drove away.
My word.
They literally dumped a dead body. And then the dead body came back to Main Event. What a nightmare. Those stories about the ECW locker room, those sorts of things are like Balls Mahoney and things. It goes beyond being a thing where people are taking drugs. It becomes this terrifying, terrifying dark place. Oof. When you're dying, that's doing too much. You need to pull back from there.
Oh, dear.
When your friend dies, you just dump them outside a hospital and then go back to work. You are doing too much. You know, it's a vision of hell.
Yeah, horrible.
Let's do the main event.
Let's do that.
That was Ric Flair. He's not involved. WWE Champion John Cena versus Rob Van Dam.
Yeah.
Rob Van Dam's greatest moment in a pretty much a career that at the time people were really sure he was one of the greats. And as time's gone on, he's looked less spectacular, mainly because I think his style was so influential. You just see it everywhere now. And at the time, nobody was like Rob Van Dam. And his sort of mix of martial arts and kicks and high flying and being a big guy, looking pretty much seen as equal, there was no one else like it. And I think history's been really, really hard on him. He's had periods as well where he's just not been motivated. And that's been a really bad thing for Hall of Fame careers. When had he basically retired in 2000, I think everyone would sort of be talking about him as one of the great American performers of the 20th century. Because he's gone on and it's just been slightly diminishing returns, I think it sort of affects him. But you forget just how big he was. And this night, he is as over in that room as anyone has ever been over in any room. The reaction to the crowd is just insane.
Yeah.
John Cena comes out and the boos that he gets are as big as the cheers that RVD has got coming in. This predates everyone going John Cena sucks to his music.
Right.
So they are just booing, and they're just booing so continuously it's almost drowning out the music. Cena comes out with his weird, he's invented his own military thing. So he's not saluting because he's worried about false valor tracking him down. He sort of just goes like that, turns his hand up. Like, it's a weird move. You see it and you just go, fake military. He comes out and he looks very serious. And he doesn't look to the sides. He doesn't do too much sort of dancing around. And I think he is actually a little bit like, this is a small building and there's a lot of people in it. And it almost feels like they could just sort of jump into the ring.
Yeah, it looks... I think when... who appears? It might actually be when the Sandman appears. I thought, could he jump off the balcony and onto Eugene?
Yeah.
Because it looks so close. And then there's a cutaway and you're like, oh, it's not that far away. But it looks like it's on top of you from some perspective.
There is a thing, if you're seen it, you've seen how they treated Eugene. And you're like, well, you know, they don't hate Eugene. They just think he's a silly character.
Yeah.
But they all ended up chanting beg while he got beaten. What are they going to do to me?
They actively
dislike. Yeah. You know, out he comes. There's some great bits here where the crowd just become the third participant in the ring. So Cena throws his T-shirt out.
Oh, fantastic, this little section.
And it comes back in. And he throws it out again, and it comes back in. And it just happens again and again. And the best thing is, the last two times it happens, the cameras are really on it.
Yeah.
And the guys who are throwing have sort of got the idea of what to do. You don't grab it and chuck it immediately.
No.
You give it a bit of time, and each time it just hits the top rope and it just hangs there.
Beautifully, yeah.
It's beautiful.
What are the chances? The last time the T-shirt gets thrown back in, it's a big... big guy wipes his arse on it and just flips in the fuck you and then throws it in.
He was
wonderful.
I believe a member of security.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
At,
he did
at
like
the ballroom.
Right,
and he was a guy, I think they brought in some of the old ECW security.
Yeah, okay.
So he would have been known to the hardcore fans pretty much in the room rather than necessarily on TV. But there was that sense, if you're John Cena, where you go, problem is, he is actually the security here. And now he's doing a against John Cena thing. This is just making everything a bit incendiary, isn't it? Then out comes toilet paper. I'm amazed this doesn't get done more often.
Yeah.
So in Japan, there's a big tradition of doing coloured streamers. You know, your favourite comes in, you fum, and out come the streamers. Mm. They've tried to clamp down on it more and more because with things like TV, you have to clear it really well. Yeah. It takes a bit of time, and you're eating into your pay-per-view
and
schedule.
It's flammable.
And things like that. Yeah. You still see it now and then. You never, ever see unpopular wrestlers being toilet papered.
Really?
And that's what he gets here, where they're throwing, instead of the coloured streamers, yeah. they're throwing toilet paper. People who have been at home and thought, I've got that pay-per-view tonight with John Cena, who I hate. What shall I do that will be funny?
Yeah, because you can't confiscate toilet paper.
I have so much respect for those
people.
You
can steal toilet paper, you can bring it in because you might have a medical problem.
Every venue will have some toilet paper.
Yes.
It might be hard to get, but you can get it, you know? It's just fantastic. The chants start, and they're all really sexual. Cena swallows, you hear a lot. But then you get stuff about you can't wrestle. And I always think that if you're a wrestler, anything else, you know, is fine. I think Randy Orton gets something along the lines of, you fuck Cena. You
right.
know? And it's all that. You can just go, yeah, very good. But when they chant, you can't wrestle, it would be really hard to sort of go, oh, well, excuse me, because I've sold out Madison. You know, it would be difficult to not let it needle you slightly, you know. RVD comes out, and you get the yay and the boo, where they are so behind him all the way. He was absolutely the only person who could have not only sort of won this match, but taken that title, you know. And it was, I don't think it was overdue. He could have won it earlier in his career. He was with WWE from about 2001 onwards. And when he first came in, he was just a phenomenon, you know. They slightly never pulled the trigger on him. I think Triple H didn't feel like he worked very well. He had a reputation over the years for potatoing people, so hitting them accidentally as hard as he could. And, you know, people didn't like necessarily. He had a stiff working style because of the moves that he did. But he was 100% the right person to take that belt at this time, and for it to have come together that they had this ECW relaunch to give him that perfect night. I think you'd be hard pressed to find any wrestler who had a better one night in the business than Rob Van Dam on this night, where he is just in front of a crowd where everybody wants him to win, where he's doing something that he must have felt over the years he was never going to get to do. He's doing it against the biggest star in WWE, not just of that period, but of the decade, possibly even, you know, since Steve Austin. You know, you're beating him, and it just seemed like a thrilling moment that I think people didn't quite believe was going to happen, even when you have that main event. For him to win was such an exciting moment for people who loved wrestling, really. It was just thrilling to see him do it. It's such a good little match. The thing is, of course, is they fuck it up. So what they do, of course, is they have Edge come from under the ring, spear John Cena through a table, and then RVD does his splash and pins him. And again, you've got that thing of WWE saying, well,
they don't trust you too.
You know, you're ECW, you couldn't have beaten John Cena. But thankfully, Edge, who's WWE, he came in and made it possible for
you.
There's a weird bit where Edge comes out with a bike helmet on, does the spear, and then takes it off.
That bit doesn't really explain. Like, why has he got a bike helmet
on? Why put a disguise on to then immediately take it off?
Yes.
You know, it just doesn't. And it's not like John Cena's like, shit, I thought that was going to be someone to attack me in the ring, but it's just an average guy in a black trench coat and a black helmet.
So, courier.
In no way is that frightening and weird. So Edge comes in. But obviously, what they were doing here behind the scenes is RVD is not the long term, you know, main man in the business. The big main man in the business that they want long term is Edge. And this is really the thing, actually, that pushes him over the edge. Ha ha ha, the word edge twice.
Yes. Other podcasts would get 5 minutes out of that.
I really thought, so what happens is the referee is down, RVD can't wake him because he's been knocked over and things. Not that it would have mattered in the scheme of Edge interfering, because it's Extreme Rules, so anything goes. So again, it seemed a bit confusing.
Yep.
But they have Paul Heyman run out and do the 1-2-3. And RVD becomes not just the WWE champion, he's rechristened the belt the ECW championship.
Right.
And I was 100% sure when I watched this at the time that they were going to do a dusty finish. So the next night on Raw, they'd say, because the referee was knocked out,
yeah,
Paul Heyman made the fast count.
Yeah.
We are not going to give RVD the WWE title. And then Paul Heyman would go, okay, in that case, he's the inaugural ECW champion.
Yeah.
And it seemed like they were leaving it open for that. But no.
They did.
No. They don't even announce him at the end as WWE champion. They say the new ECW champion, RVD.
But that's not what he wants.
Did they? Was this an insurance policy?
What do you mean? As in, like...
As in they can change their mind the next night. Is this... I was really unsure about it.
Because obviously he got the Money in the Bank thing, so which made him able to take a shot at the title.
Yeah.
He chose at this point. So, yeah, that should have been the WWE type. They're just the big title.
I just thought that the way they delivered it, that thing of saying, not saying the WWE champion, I really thought, oh, okay, tomorrow they're going to go, no, it didn't work out. Then we're going to get triple threat matches and watch RVD fizzle. But no, the next day it was just like, yep, that happened. Wow, great. Was that because the reception was good or something?
Right.
I just don't know. It seemed to have all the elements of the dusty finish, named after Dusty Rhodes, who used to do that. You'd go and see a title shot and the next day on TV they'd sort of go, it turned out it was a disqualification because we essentially like VAR, where they'd go, we looked over the tapes and it turned out he actually went over the top rope, which is an immediate disqualification. Bad luck everyone who paid all that money and enjoyed it. Out comes RVD, just runs into the crowd, who are delighted to see him. And RVD then hugs his wife. He goes up to the balcony and hugs her. And again, that was a sort of odd thing that made it seem more real. You sort of go, yeah, if you did win a championship and you were a real sportsman, and you would have your wife in the building, and you would go up and you would hug her. And so that element of real was really sort of like exciting. That's RVD's ex-wife now.
Oh.
That's Sonia. there's some good stuff here. she had the house worker on payroll for many, many years. Now they're married and they have lots of my money. That's her great success story. Anyway, she's been gone almost 5 years, seems longer, and I'm way the fuck over that. The next tweet reads, it was 100% her choice. I am so happy she left and married that guy that painted my green room. So they broke up. Since then, RVD's had a relationship with one of the Impact wrestlers. Right. I forget her name. And he's always on Twitter boasting about his wife and girlfriend. He's often in a hot tub with two women who will be topless. He has his own range of CBD? It's that cannabis
CBD
oil thing.
Yeah.
He has his own RVD range of that.
RVD CBD. That kind of works for me.
Yeah,
to be honest.
It will do. And he is a proponent of marijuana. He's talked about it for years. It's also the thing that entirely sours what happened at this event. So within a month, he and Sabu are in a car. And they're driving back from a house show. And RVD is the champion. And Sabu is next to him in the car. And a policeman pulls them over because they're speeding. It turns out they're going about 10 miles over the speeding thing. There is some audio of it.
Speed limit 55. I checked your speed at 73.
Oh, I thought it was 65. I'm sorry.
Okay.
We were wrestling in Huntington tonight on our way to Columbus.
Who are you wrestling for?
WWE.
Is that right?
Nobody else.
I don't follow wrestling.
No, I just mean we're like,
somebody on TV or something?
Yeah, world champion.
What do you go by?
Rob Van Dam, RVD.
Oh, okay, I've heard of you.
Yeah.
What's your name, Ball?
Sabu.
Well, it's 55, man.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't realize. I thought it was 65.
You're rolling pretty hard.
I don't need to do that.
You always drive with your shirt off?
It was very hot leaving the area. No, I don't.
Did you wrestle tonight?
Yeah, just a few minutes ago.
Do you have any marijuana, guns, knives, drugs, anything like that in the vehicle? Can you explain to me why your car smells like dope?
Oh, no.
Can you explain why your car smells like dope? Oh, yes, you can.
Because I like the Pope. He's been around.
the officer performed a search of the car. He discovered RVD had 18 grams of marijuana alongside 5 Vicodins. Sabu was found holding drug paraphernalia and 9 tablets of testolactone. Both RVD and Sabu were arrested. They posted bond. I think they got fined. But the problem was RVD was in the middle of this huge push. He'd basically won that championship about a month before. And what the WWE had to do, because of their wellness policy, was they had to suspend him.
Right.
And they basically, when the news came in, they said, we need to just allow 2 days for us to investigate fully. And those 2 days covered Monday Night Raw and ECW, which allowed both men to wrestle and RVD to lose the belt.
Right.
And okay. So off he went. He has, it's always been seen as a big what if. What if that hadn't have happened?
Yeah.
They would have possibly gone with RVD for a longer period than they certainly would have gone with him for a longer period than they did. But RVD himself has said that it was actually fine. He said he didn't think it changed his career in any way. He did an interview with the Baltimore Sun, and he said, there was no way I was going to be the longest reigning world champion in WWE. Nobody thinks that. People like to say plans were dropped for ECW because of that night. Heck no. Most people think that was just a transitional moment anyway. From my perspective, when people say that couldn't have happened at a worse time, I always say it couldn't have happened at a better time.
I wouldn't go that far, RVD.
I mean, none of it actually makes sense, no, what he says. No. He's just like, yeah, no, absolutely, yeah.
He,
no,
I think you caught him in the evening for that interview.
Yeah.
He I'm chilled out about it, to be honest.
He basically says, he says as well, the fact is, if I wasn't the WWE and ECW world champion at the time, nobody would have cared. It wouldn't have been all over the news. But you were. So it was.
Oh, bless him.
He basically has said, look, I needed the time off. I was getting burnt out. If I'd have been the champion, they'd have used me so much more, and I probably would have gone absolutely round the bend. He said, I paid a $100 fine for possession of marijuana. The WWE suspension ended up costing me like 30 or 40 grand easily. You know what? I asked for more time off at the end of the 30-day suspension, and that was one of the favourite months of my contract.
Oh.
That's how much I wanted out of there and how much I missed being home.
RVD, that's a lovely thing to say.
Yeah,
he said. I mean, you shouldn't slag off your ex-wife.
No, these days I can't imagine going back to the same schedule that I had before. No, 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 no. No, is what it says. Yeah, so he's carried on like with a career. He's had a couple of WWE returns. He's wrestling at the minute with Sabu in Impact Wrestling, where they are very much a sort of, you know, a nostalgia-y act, but they can still go. He is one of those guys who I think when he does finally hang up the tights for good, I think people will reevaluate how good he is. But because he's never really been away, I think people just take him for granted a bit, which is a shame. And watching him do this bit, this big moment, it was weird. I think sometimes when you watch this stuff now, it doesn't seem big, but I remember watching that at the time, and that seemed one of the biggest, most exciting moments in wrestling.
One of the worst bits of that match is his head going through a chair.
Oh yes, when it's in the turnbuckle.
In the turnbuckle. John Cena is jammed into the turnbuckle, and his head goes through it, and it is one of the most spectacular,
yeah,
but it's quite small moves. But
he was very good at doing a move where they'd give him a DDT, and he would manage to get his body entirely straight when he did it. So again, it looked like he was just a dart in the lawn, and it was just he was really, really good.
Yeah.
I think it's funny, nobody ever talks about him as being one of the greats, and he 100% is one of the greats.
Well, you notice on his what they called us leotard. Is it leotard? Yeah, or what they call them? Singlet, is it?
Singlets.
Was he wearing a singlet?
Wrestling singlet.
Either way, he's got ECW written on it. And everybody in this show is just, basically, is just trying to say that I am a bigger part of ECW than you realise. And every time the commentary team mugged them off by saying, oh, little bit fucking tryhard, isn't it? Rey Mysterio, your bell end, or your ECW mask. And it's like, you dress them. Don't have a go at them. Try the best.
Talking of dressing, you can actually buy a lot of Rob Van Dam's stuff.
He's got
an eBay store.
Nice.
And it's run by people outside. So I think they're just people who are like, we're fans, you know, can we go through your old stuff? And I think he's like, oh, whatever. And you can buy old hats that he's worn, but not they're not signed or anything. They're just like WWE beanies. And for his personal, $25. It's not bad.
How much you'd pay for a beanie, wouldn't you?
Exactly. They're reasonably priced. But you can also get things like he's signed his WrestleMania 20 backstage pass, his Wrestle Kingdom 5 backstage pass, all the ECW pay-per-views they had throughout the sort of 90s. He signed all those. And I was sort of thinking, he doesn't seem like the sort of guy who'd be together enough to have collected all this stuff really assiduously. But certainly when you go through his eBay store, he has kept everything. You can buy his singlets as well. I noticed he'd sold one of his iconic ones to a fan. They go for about $1,000 or something like that, $639. I like merch.
Yeah.
I don't want something that's been on some wrestler's balls again and again and again in what was very famously one of the most unhygienic places on earth, which is the ECW locker room.
Yeah, you'd have to get... It'd be delivered in a sharp spin. You wouldn't want it to... You wouldn't come in contact with it. You got a kid.
If they find out you've actually received an RVD singlet yeah, through the post, you will be prosecuted. But you're prosecuted like by the Wildlife Service.
Yeah, so you're technically a bioterrorist. I noticed that the tie-dye guy is in the crowd, and it's the first time I've seen him with his MySpace. He's just basically got a sign that says myspace.com/tie-dye guy, and I was like, "What's this guy all about?" And he's still around.
Is he?
He's still on Twitter. Or rather, he's on Twitter. He's known as the tie-dye guy. This is his description on Twitter. The WWE superfan tie-dye guy, known worldwide for sitting ringside for over 500 live WWE, WCW and ECW shows. Longest running fan gimmick in pro wrestling.
Not it's true. Like, not true. Not true.
Come on. That said, one of his...
Have you got a picture of him? Let me see tie-dye.
He's a tie-dye guy. He basically dresses as Hulk Hogan. And in a lot of the...
Yes. Okay.
He looks like... He basically looks a bit like Hulk Hogan, but he's... But so you can always see him like in the background, like flexing when Hulk Hogan.
Gotcha.
He looks like such a loser. I love it.
Oh man!
But he constantly wears hulky sunglasses and a bandana and like a little shirt, and he's just in a lot of like NXT shows and stuff.
They're sort of small, essentially a local thing, and if you live nearby, you can go there pretty much for free.
Right.
But then don't dress up as a sort of a wrestler. You're not a wrestler.
Well, when he was in his Two World Order Hollywood Hogan phase, you can see. Hulk in the ring flexing, and he's in the background having a little flex of his very own.
It's like How to Get Ahead in Advertising. You know when Richard E. Grant grows that second head on his neck?
Yes.
It's a bit like that.
This is him in New Orleans, where a shot girl is rubbing her ample bosom in his face and giving him a slap. It's all very it's a bit Tony Atlas for my money, but,
it is, isn't it? Yeah,
the tie-dye guy, he's still around.
Being proud of being a fan. The only fan who is actually also at 2006 who is a famous fan is a guy called Vladimir.
Right.
And Vladimir is a guy who he was at WWE events sort of from the late 80s all the way through to the sort of the Attitude era. Mm. And he was just a big dude, a really big sort of tall, long built guy. And it always seemed like, because you saw him in so many shows, you'd always be like, oh, is he going to be the next? Is he going to come out? And I think that's what Vladimir thought. That you thought you're there long enough, sooner or later.
You go, hey, you.
Yeah.
You're part of this now.
A bit like, you know, when like John Tenta, who we started this sort of big review with. Yep. John Tenta was the guy who they sort of go, would you like to come out and, you know, Dino Bravo's going to do press-ups. We need someone to sit on his back. Sir, will you do it?
Yeah, all right.
And he came out and it was a big surprise. You know, you'd never seen this guy before. And he was like a big fat guy. And then he suddenly started attacking Hulk Hogan. And there's, I think that thing of Vladimir, I certainly, when I first went to wrestling, when I was probably, what would I have been, 13, I used to go to bed the night before and I'd think, I wonder if they're going to call me into the ring.
Hey, you.
Hey.
It's like the...
I need some help here against New Jack. With this 12-year-old boy.
You could have been mass transit.
Oh, that would have been lovely.
Magic.
You can also just, if you do get a chance, check out RVD's eBay store. You can also buy a number of books from his personal marijuana book collection.
Okay, good.
Yeah, there's lovely a lot of them.
Nice.
There are a lot of them. So that's ECW One Night Stand 2006.
A lovely little amuse-bouche.
Amuse-bouche.
In between a lot of quite dry WrestleManias.
Yes, very much so. And ECW, I mean, it would now sort of kick off after this pay-per-view on Sci-Fi. Mm. And it ran for about 4 years. I mean, it was always doing appallingly.
Right.
Everybody hated. No one was an ECW fan after 3 weeks of it.
Okay.
And it just went really, really badly. By December, Paul Heyman has been fired from WWE after their terrible December to Dismember pay-per-view.
Right. And
it just sort of went down the toilet from there. You end up getting the ECW champion for quite a long while is Vince McMahon, which seemed like the ultimate sort of, I've brought it back, you know. And given it to myself, and I'm going to rub your faces and how much you hate it. That will teach you to love something. Crazy
oh,
times.
Man. Well, that has been ECW. We'll be back next time with WrestleMania 23.
I believe so.
Can't believe I got that right. Well, just as we reach the end of the hour, it remains only for me to say...
Is this Radio 4? Are you going to throw to the shipping forecast? That sounded really exciting.
Coming up next, Women's Hour with Lauren Laverne. Wrestle me, Mark.
Wrestle me, Pete!
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.